Timory Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember. Even with a busy speaking and radio schedule, she finds time to devote to her creative love of dance. Don Johnson is an author, speaker, and major motion picture film producer. Both hold master's degrees in theology, and together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. From the Southern California studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending with Don and Timory.
This last week, Don, The Bachelor, actually former members of The Bachelor, should I say, Bachelor in Paradise, which I guess there's been a lot of controversy and scandal over the spinoff reality TV show. Well, what's happened is there have been two happy marriages, evidently, and in fact, new lives coming out of this. One of the couples, married Carly and Evan Bass, of season two, actually announced on television with a live ultrasound that they're pregnant.
I must admit, Timory, I was not familiar with the show Bachelors in Paradise or that there was any scandal. I am not up on my Bachelor news, but this is a good one. I actually love this story. They talk about how just recently Carly and Evan came on and with the live ultrasound showed the baby to the world. As you might guess, the mainstream media is not that happy, actually, with this. People being happy and seeing the baby, I mean, what could be the problem?
Well, and it's so fascinating because for anyone who's even just seen an ultrasound image where they've clearly seen the distinct child there, imagine a video on television and they show the baby moving and the ultrasound technician pointing out the perfectly formed baby and the fact that it was jumping. And I mean, this couple, Don, on television, Carly and Evan are elated to see their little baby girl, which they end up finding out and announcing online right after this. And it's interesting because here, you know, the technician on television is referring to the child in the womb as a baby on TV, which for so many people is just atrocious that they would even call this a baby.
What else is the technician supposed to do exactly when you see the head and the arms and they're waving, you know, smiling? I mean, what else are you supposed to call that thing inside there?
One really interesting response, which, I mean, just picking it apart, people have really criticized Carly and Evan now for announcing this, or I think also for showing too much. Here's what an author, very well-known Lindsay Denner from The Bustle, wrote. She said, Carly and Evan met on television. They got married on television. She continues later saying, Carly would let a national television audience look inside her body. But that was what happened, and I was simultaneously horrified and in awe. We as viewers know everything there is to know about the Bachelor Nation contestants we watch on the franchise, but I didn't need to know what the inside of Carly's uterus looked like. That's what she reduced this to.
This really was quite an enlightening paragraph, and we'll post the link. Timory is always very good about posting the links on Twitter and on the website. This enlightens the whole issue, I think, and clarifies a lot of things. For this writer at Bustle, there is nothing besides the woman. That when you look inside the woman using the ultrasound, what you see, and this is her words, this is not mine, but you see Carly's uterus. That's how she phrased it. She said, I didn't need to see what the inside of Carly's uterus looks like. And for those of us on the pro-life side, we look at that and say, are you insane? Are you blind? There's something a little bit more there than just the linings of a uterus, isn't there? Of course there's a baby right there.
And it's not like it's something gross.
Well, it's not. But they cannot admit, and this is the whole, you know, the pro-woman, pro-choice, right? That's what it's supposed to be. Those who support abortion, they use terms like pro-woman, pro-choice, because they cannot focus on anything but the woman and her body. To admit that there might be someone, something even, else in play besides a woman. So we can't admit, for example, that there's anything but a uterus there. Well, what's that with the arms and the head and the body and waving? What is that? Oh, that's just the uterus? Well, no, it isn't just the uterus, is it? But that really is enlightening. Like, that's how you have to frame the issue from the pro-abortion side, is that there's nothing else there. And, of course, it's fundamentally an anti-science, anti-truth, put your head in the sand sort of position, isn't it? As was made very clear by this Bachelor TV spectacle.
And what's so awful about it, Don, is that anymore there's such a criticism of any woman who wants to celebrate her pregnancy or celebrate her family. And this is what you're seeing another example of. It's no problem if you want to speak vulgarly about sexuality. That's no problem whatsoever. You can talk about it in front of kids. You can do whatever you want in front of kids about gender fluidity and just being all over each other. This is what's ridiculous. But you show a simple black and white image of an ultrasound, and now all of a sudden, this is horrific. It's offensive that someone would show me the inside of their uterus. You're not even seeing a graphic image here. You're seeing a black and white image that you don't even know what those walls are unless you're thinking about it, right?
Ultimately, to be pro-abortion, you either have to deny the truth, or, on the other hand, and this is another story we have in our list of things here, Timmy, or you have to accept a very horrific truth. So you could just deny. You could just keep on denying, like, no, there's no baby. It's just a clump of cells. There's nothing. It's just part of the woman's uterus that we're removing. I mean, you really have to deny a lot. Or, on the other hand, and we've had several examples of this, and now we've got another one this week, you could just admit that, yeah, you know what, it's a baby and we're killing it. A horrific story out of San Diego, so your hometown there, Timmy. I mean, on one hand, it's horrific. On the other hand, thankfully, this abortion doctor is not practicing anymore. But the story comes out of NBC San Diego. Not that long ago, was it? Within the last couple of years, there was a peaceful demonstration in front of an abortion clinic, and the doctor actually came out and confronted the people there.
Well, this is an abortion clinic. Part of the reason why I wanted to cover it, that we have been extremely active out here in San Diego, and I've actually run a number of 40 Days for Life campaigns at this specific abortion clinic. So it's a family planning associate. And Dr. Robert Santella has been known for a number of botched abortions. He actually has a past record going all the way back into the 80s of negligence and severe incompetence labeled and clearly recognized with the medical board. And then you go back almost 20 years later to 2000, yet again getting in trouble with the medical board to maintain adequate medical records. They had a really serious botched abortion last year, and he's been over-prescribing narcotics. Well, with that in mind, what happened is he came out in front of the abortion clinic, Don, and he started yelling at some of the people who were out there praying and talking, and the man on the video saying, no, like, what you're doing is killing babies, essentially. And he speaks very clearly to the man, is non-confrontational physically, but the abortionist ends up coming up to him, getting in his face. He's literally growling at him, saying that he likes killing babies, making weird voice like, yeah, it's great, making creepy noises. And apparently he had a pair of surgical scissors in his hands the whole time as well. And so now he's actually having his license revoked by the medical board.
Yeah, praise God he is. One more bad, I hesitate to use the term doctor, but you watch this video, Timmy, it's hard not to describe it as demonic. The guy comes out and is, you know, accused of killing babies, and he, in that guttural tone, says, yeah, I love it. Honestly, I'd never seen anything like it, and I was not aware of this story before this week when I saw that, but you go back and review the video, and it's like the face of evil sort of exposed itself just for a few minutes. You know, we talked about, even in this segment, about the propaganda and the lies. Here, just for a few moments, the face of evil popped out and showed itself. And I just, it's just a good reminder, to me at least, that this is what we're dealing with. Like, killing millions of babies, as we have done over the past several decades in this country, that's satanic. That is evil. We must keep up the fight and, one by one, keep these doctors from practicing.
And, you know, waking people up to seeing that these doctors are not good doctors. they are not good working professionals, even considering that they're performing abortion and it's legal. Many of the abortionists that we have confronted have often left other fields of medicine because they already had low standards. It's looked upon in the medical industry that performing abortions is a very low level of medicine. Even though it's a very lucrative, it's a low level.
Yeah, and again, this is an anti-woman thing, right? Like, these doctors don't have anybody's good in mind. You want to be pro-woman. Let's just say, I'll grant you that you're fighting for the rights of women. Well, no women are being done any good by being sent to abortion doctors by this guy. He's just harming women left and right.
You're completely correct on. And I mean, just what we saw last year in 2016 with how the Supreme Court addressed the Texas issue with all the Texas abortion clinics that were closing, they were closing not based on pro-life laws. They were closing based on basic medical health and cleanliness standards, such as cleanliness in the clinic, being able to bring a gurney through the different doors. They couldn't even have basic ambulatory privileges at a local hospital within something like 20 to 30 miles for these women to receive care if anything went wrong with the abortion, because people don't understand. Abortion clinics are there to perform abortions. They're not there with the equipment they need to resuscitate or address any issues that go wrong. And so all these abortion clinics were closing, but then Planned Parenthood and other NARAL pro-abortion groups appealed to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court acknowledges this is an undue burden on a woman, and so they leave the clinics open. This is ridiculous.
Timmery and Dawn will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Dawn Johnson Media. From the studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending. Trending. With Dawn and Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
The headline says that MTV went off the air for 12 hours. And when I read it, I thought, hey, that's great. Thankfully, whatever it takes to get MTV off the air, this must be good. Unfortunately, Timmery, not for a good cause.
It's so interesting. You know, MTV and a lot of other media networks, specifically here right now in Australia, have been going off air, really making a point of communicating, we are in favor of legalizing same-sex marriage, of the gender ideology movement, as people are calling it, the gender revolution. And it's so interesting, Dawn, because what you're seeing here is that in your face, over and over again, so many companies that millennials, young people are involved in, are making sure that they're communicating, you know, we're here for you, we work with you, but we are also in the favor of love and acceptance. And, you know, it reminds me, Dawn, that we can put a social media logo up supporting whatever we might believe in. We can throw some social media posts up that do impact and plant seeds for people. But it's a reminder of the importance of how we've done evangelization and how we've spoken to people for years. Through relationship and conversations, those change even deeper hearts than minds.
The marriage thing, every time I see the term same-sex marriage, I'll admit it irritates me more and more. You'd think I'd be getting less irritated over the years, but the more I study the sexual revolution and the destruction of families, the more it's clear to me that the entire thing, the whole sexual revolution up to and including all of the gender stuff we have going on and all of the same-sex stuff, it's about the destruction of the family. And every aspect of it, including this appeal to marriage, actually breaks down families, which is what marriage is supposed to be about. This is not a pro-family movement. As such, this is not a pro-love movement. Let's keep showing our friends, relatives, coworkers, the real path to love. Because, you know, if you're out there and you're watching MTV in Australia and you think, yeah, hey, I'm pro-love, this is not pro-love. And so, yeah, I think it's a good reminder, Timmery. Let's keep going with this.
And, you know, it makes me think, you know, there's a reason just last week we actually did a whole show talking about people and family members with same-sex attraction, like, I really want to encourage people to go back to iTunes, listen to that podcast, or go to trendingdt.com, because we talk in depth about this topic. But again, what it keeps coming back to, Dawn, and I think that having a really practical conversation about this, like we did last week, it comes back to having those conversations with people, not just putting up a social media post. Because if we aren't having them, the story is already being told, the conversation is being had, but with an image that is just influencing, with another image that is just influencing, saying, this is what you should believe, this is what you should think, without much of the conversation, the thought behind it.
I often use the term the air we breathe as a culture, like the air my kids breathe as they leave the house. And sometimes, unfortunately, even in the house as they listen to the music or whatever. And, you know, again, we're very protective parents. I feel like we're quite protective. I'm doing my best. But the air that my kids breathe still is toxic in many ways. They've got ads that are showing them certain things. And so, yeah, it's not enough just to think, well, you know, they're good kids, they'll be okay. No, we have to proactively be talking about these things, realize that if we leave it passive, the rest of the culture is not passive. And I admit, as a dad, I mean, it's just tough constantly being on guard. And no, I don't want to have that conversation, to be honest, you know, but we have to.
We absolutely have to. And, you know, even it's been interesting because ESPN has come under a little bit of fire over the last couple of weeks as well, because they have been called out in some ways by some people, but also they've defended what they've been doing, and that they're showing more and more nudity, basically, on their television, on their website, and also on a special edition of what I believe is their magazine of, you know, really famous people. For example, the martial arts fighter, Conor McGregor, who's naked but just slightly covering, you know, his private area with his leg, I believe, just so you can't see it completely, all of his body.
It was several years ago. Somehow I got a free subscription to the ESPN magazine. And I remember this because there's only one magazine that we get, I think, as a family anymore. Because you can go online, right? You just read the articles online. But anyway, somebody sent me ESPN. And so I'm like, all right, whatever. Well, about four magazines in, it shows up and it's full of totally naked people. And my wife comes in. She's like sort of laughing about it. But she's like, Don, what are you getting in the mail? And I looked, I'm like, I don't know. What am I ordering, Playboy? What is this?
If only people could see your face. You're shocked too.
I was totally shocked. I'm like, honey, I don't know. I'm sorry. I didn't order the stupid magazine. I stopped it. Actually, immediately after that, got online and said, I don't want your stupid magazine, because why are you sending me? And here's what it is, right? How do you sell magazines? You put as many naked people on as you can. Sports Illustrated had the swimsuit edition, which is just soft porn. And ESPN had to up the ante a little bit. So they have the body issue where there's no swimsuits at all. It's literally fully naked athletes.
And you know what's interesting to me, Don, is the defense of it. So ESPN's public editor, Jim Brady, has come out writing an op-ed defending their decision. And just looking at the decision, it makes sense. He outright talks about how essentially this is focused on consumers and the shifting of consumer interest. And how, he, you know, basically it's a clear standard for the shift to make place for the network, especially because ESPN, quote, is eager to attract. And then he continues to say, and doesn't have the same hang-ups about nudity, profanity, and other long-held no-nos that older generations do. So he's saying younger people are willing to be accepting and interested in all things, and they don't have these rules that the older generation did to hide it, essentially.
Yeah, this paragraph is one of those ones that makes me want to pull my hair out. He says, like, oh, well, hey, those kids don't have the same hang-ups about nudity and profanity and all those things, so that's what we feed them. And I'm thinking, do you know why they don't have the hang-ups? Because people like you started feeding them the swimsuit edition and all the rest of it years ago. That's how cultural shifts happen, is that you feed them a little bit, and then you give them a little bit more, and then when someone someone gets upset, you say, hey, well, no, nobody cares about that stuff anymore, right? Like, oh, well, we give them a little bit of porn, and now they like that. So we give them a little hardcore porn, and now they like that. And it's just such a silly, irritating argument to me. How about you just have standards that you hold to, right? And so I was frustrated. This last edition, I noticed, had several hockey players, and I'm thinking, guys, what are you doing? Like, what is it that you're trying to accomplish by posing completely naked?
It's not pleasant, okay?
No, it's not. It's not pleasant. I don't want to see people naked in your with your skates on. Like, this is not not attractive in any way. Anyway, and again, it's another. It's more objectifying, right? Like, it is reducing the people to their material parts, right? Like, this is not a pro woman. This is not a pro man. This is not a pro athlete thing. This is somebody's son. This is somebody's daughter. It's somebody's wife. I mean, do I want my wife, even if she's a great athlete, to be completely naked? I don't. I mean, maybe they have a different spousal relationship. But I think that's not what it's about. It's even called the body issue, right? It's about reducing that person to their parts. You know, Timmy, I had an interesting conversation with Sue Ellen Browder, who used to write for Cosmo. Mm-hmm. And she actually, as part of our interview, she had brought a couple of editions of Cosmo, one from the late 60s and early 70s and one from today. And she said, you know, it was bad even in the 60s, but look at today. And what was interesting about this latest Cosmo cover that she had, the woman appearing on it actually had a tape measure strapped around her midsection, right? And I thought, well, what do you measure? Like, what do you use a tape measure for? To measure things, right? And it's like, they're so clearly objectifying this poor woman. Like, this is somebody's daughter again. This is a person who has dreams and wants. But what are we seeing? Her body with a tape measure around it. And they're showing how she can have the best orgasm or become thinnest or something silly, right? And it's just so demeaning.
You know, it's so interesting you bring this up, because literally sitting in front of me on my desk right now, I had car trouble this today, so I wasn't able to be in studio. But sitting in front of me on my desk were notes that I jotted down last night. So for those who don't know, in addition to speaking in radio, I'm a Pilates trainer. And Pilates, for those who think it's yoga, it's not. Pilates centers around spine health. And a lot of what we do, you know, when I did my certification years back, I worked with actually a lot of people who were physical therapists because they were wanting to increase and work more on their practice. So I work a lot with people and their bodies, and I had this woman yesterday, Dawn, who I was working on rehabbing, and it was really interesting because she looked at me at one point, and she goes, I think you're skinnier than so-and-so, and she's comparing me to another one of the trainers. And you know what's funny is I've always tried really hard not to compare myself to other people. And also more so, it's that if I see someone who's really fit, I think of, you know, it's an encouragement to stay healthy for me. That's why I train people in Pilates. I want to help them to overcome injuries and rehab what they're going through. But it was such a moment of how this older woman could look back at me and compare me to another individual. I was actually, my mind really offended by that. And even with her having said, I think you're skinnier, just the thought that we have to compare, whether it's the magazine or the issue of ESPN, the body edition, that right away a lot of people sit there comparing themselves and other people, and like you said, reduces them to objects rather than people who are working with their different body shapes, sizes, colors, whatever it is.
Timmery and Dawn will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E and at Dawn Johnson Media. This is Trending with Dawn and Timmery on Immaculate Heart Radio. To learn more about Dawn Johnson or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit DawnJohnsonMinistries.org or Timmery.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.
The Winter Olympics are going to be interesting in that, according to the latest news, they're going to allow transgender athletes to compete in whatever category they wish to participate in. This should be good.
Yeah, we're looking for the PyeongChang 2018 Olympics. That basically the standard isn't changing. There aren't really any clear rules, just like the 2016 Rio Olympics, with regard to people who are maybe experiencing gender confusion or, as some people are calling it, you know, female hydrogenism. There's no real clear rule, which is why you see even in the Judy Chong case that concerns the Indian sprinter who was basically fighting to be able to compete even with her experience of female hydrogenism, that a lot of these cases are very unclear and they don't always know how to work with them. Like we covered, especially on Hearts and Minds last year during the Olympics, Caster Semenya, who really dominated and won in her, I think she was a runner if I remember correctly, and it was also very clear she had very high levels of testosterone, yet they weren't monitoring this correctly, and so it could be perceived as doping, it could be perceived as a health concern, but there are no clear rules.
Well, you're talking about no clear rules. That seems to me to sum up the whole thing. I mean, if they really want to solve this whole Olympic issue with the transgenderism and the doping and all of that, they just need to throw out the rule book completely, including the whole category of men and women. Let's just have an event and you do whatever you want to do beforehand and during the event, and we won't have any rules, and whoever wins wins. And so if we've got a 100-meter race and you can, you know, strap an engine to the back of your back or whatever, I mean, basically, we just have to abandon any notion that there are rules or categories when it comes to these sporting events, if this is going to make any sense. Because, I mean, I thought the IOC was all about the rules, right? Like, oh, you can't have, I mean, people get tossed out of the Olympics for all sorts of things. I remember, of course, the big scandal when I was growing up was the 1988 Olympics when Canada's hero, Ben Johnson, lost his world record and gold medal. It was the big race. It was him versus Carl Lewis, and Ben Johnson lost his gold medal because he had been caught doping.
Right. And I mean, I think of Lance Armstrong, too, I mean, all of his work with biking, and because he was caught doping, he ended up, I mean, all of his titles ended up being revoked. And I look at this, and I know that that's a whole other debate, whether or not you think that's okay or not. I know a lot of people on both sides of it, but for me, I look at it as black and white. Are you using something that is an unfair advantage in order to compete? And, I mean, even in the case where we're seeing people who are men, young boys, who are identifying as female in high school, and due to some of the transgender rules, these boys are being allowed to compete in girls' sports, what's happening? The teenage boys are dominating and beating all the girls, but it's allowed because they're a quote-unquote transgender girl.
Well, that's the thing. I'm trying hard to figure out what the difference is. What's the difference, Timory, between having a boy who has much higher levels of testosterone racing in an event with a bunch of girls? What's different between that and, you know, the classic story, again, me growing up, was the East German women who would always show up at weightlifting events absolutely looking like men because they were so jacked up with all sorts of testosterone. It was always sort of a joke, like, of course the East German women, you know, are going to come up and dominate all of these strength events because they're basically turning themselves into men before the event. I'm trying hard to see how that is different than what we're seeing. How is it different to have just straight up men show up and compete as women, or women pumping themselves full of testosterone? And I just think, let's just throw out the rules. Forget it. Let's not even worry about it.
I think that while people are saying that science, you know, the Olympics haven't caught up to science, the new gender ideologies, I think it's pretty clear. We have made such incredible achievements in science that you can understand when something's wrong with a woman's body and her hormone levels are off with testosterone, estrogen, progesterone, all these levels, we can work with a woman's body to bring her back into a healthy place. And so if we're trying to achieve maximum health for people, we should be achieving that even with our Olympic athletes who are working incredibly hard, you know, and not allowing people to say, well, it's not black and white. There are blurred lines. We need to be clear and having high expectations of truly Olympic Games that have brought together some of the hardest people, working people in the world.
And of course, I'm kidding about the notion that we should throw out all rules for these Olympic events, because it is just those women that you were talking about, Timory, those ones that have trained hard, that have done their best, that have given up their mornings and their date nights and all the rest of that to train hard, like you did as a dancer, to become a world-class dancer. It is cheating those women to just say, okay, now that you've reached that point, we're going to change all the rules and we're going to throw out all the rules and you're going to have to compete against men. Sorry, I mean, this is another example of being anti-woman.
Yes, and you know, this is what's fascinating, because in the name of the women's movement, people are arguing, right, that this gender ideology, we should be all for it. But at the end of the day, both men and women are struggling. But here you give a concrete example. It's the women in sports who are struggling now, all the way down to the kids who are just having fun in high school, to those Olympic athletes, like you said, who have trained so incredibly hard.
Yeah, I think we mentioned the girl on the East Coast who was the record holder in her state, and she was just had worked so hard. And then this year, a mediocre male runner, like a guy who couldn't make the male team, who wouldn't be the fastest male by any means, came and broke all of her records. I believe it was like New Hampshire, somewhere up there in New England.
Right.
And I just, how can you not feel bad for the girl who's worked hard, had all those records, and now some guy just decides, I'm going to identify as female for these races? I mean, it's nonsense. It's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. And, you know, we've been talking about sports over the last few months, too. I mean, we talked about Serena Williams and how people are criticizing her because she's the one celebrating her pregnancy, right?
Yeah.
But then she was also referred to as, like, one of the best tennis players. And then some people got offended because someone said one of the best female tennis players.
That's right.
And it's just, oh, my gosh, you guys.
we really have embraced insanity in our culture. Yeah, it was a hilarious moment. John McEnroe. Talking about, and here he is, he's trying to praise Serena Williams as this awesome tennis player, and he gets accosted by saying, well, why do you say she's the best female? And he looks at her, and he was just being honest. He's like, well, because she'd be about 700 if we did it in the, and he wasn't being mean. He was just being accurate. There's stories, if you dig into this, some of the, and I'm sorry, I can't remember her name, but one of the premier women tennis players of all time admits, you know what, I was the best on the planet, but I couldn't beat my husband. And he was not even a pro tennis player. Right? I mean, and I'm not, again, this is not an anti-woman thing. This is about being pro-truth, about being pro-science. Right. I mean, if you want to put your head in the sand, put your brain in your back pocket, completely embrace irrationality and put all evidence to the side and basically hold to what I would call a fideistic religious faith. So like those bad religions that just say you have to believe based on no evidence, you just have to accept this as a matter of faith. This is not Christianity I'm talking about, because Christianity does not define faith that way. But all of those religions that say, don't think about it, just believe. That's what you're doing with this whole transgender thing. You're saying, don't think about it, just believe. And indeed, the science is so against this. We've got another story here. I'm scrolling down, Timory, about Walt Heyer, the guy who had a sex change operation. I actually know Walt. So the Walt Heyer is a guy who lived as a woman for many years. Well, in fact, while he was transitioning and living as a woman, he actually stayed with some of my wife's relatives. So I actually knew Walt back in those days.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, in the Bay Area. And then Walt moved out of that, and now he's a strong proponent against transgenderism, saying what a terrible thing. I encourage you to check out Walt's writings on this. So we were kind of there through these years. But he points to the notion that, you know what, even when I had all the operations done, I still wasn't a female. Genetically, I'm still a male.
Right. And a lot of people that asked him about this, and he said, just because you have an operation, just because you suddenly receive hormones, does not change fundamentally who you are. Your body is still wired as a male or as a female biologically, even if you manipulate and mutilate your body.
Well, and that's the right words for it, right? It's manipulate and mutilate, but it's not changing. You're not changing your sex, actually. And here's a guy who's been through it all. I think it was 7 or 8 years. He tried to live as a female, but he says, you know what? I was never female. I was always male. And it's a wonderful story. I encourage you to look up Walt Heyer.
SexChangeRegret.com, I believe. He's got, incredible stories, both of himself and others.
And it's another good example, just before we break here, Timory, the family that he lived with at the time, who are my extended family, essentially, just continued to love Walt through all of that. They were there for him. They didn't abandon him. They didn't break off communication. He actually stayed with them for a while, and just the most wonderful people. And I just feel like if he hadn't had those people there, even through all of his trials, that he may not have come out the other side. So I just take hope, keep loving those friends and family members. And of course, you've had experiences with this as well, Timory, but, it's a long journey, and we don't know the end of the story.
Timory and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E and at Don Johnson Media. Views expressed on Trending with Don and Timory are for educational purposes only.
Another interesting example here of just the fight with religious liberty, Don. We've seen cases like this across the country, but there has been this Coach Joe Kennedy, who back in 2015 lost his job for taking a knee silently in prayer at the end of a game. He himself, in listening to his interviews, has really been one to praise and glorify our Lord for any successes. And he recognizes here that it was a moment of praising our Lord for the success of his team. But what happened is the school was actually asking their employees not to basically pray, bow their head in prayer, even really over a meal. And so when he knelt down, he ended up being fired for this. And now the Ninth Circuit Court is defending the fact that he lost his job.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, I can see the argument here, but you're going to have to stick with me through this whole segment, because obviously I'm a person who thinks you should be able to pray during a football game. But I get the argument where they say, listen, you're a state employee, and as a state, we educate our children and we use schools to do that. And so when you're an employee of our school and you're operating in public as an employee of a school that is operated by the state, you have to proclaim, if you will, the worldview of the state, what we are educating our children. And what we are educating our children in is not Christianity. We are not a Christian state. We're not a Christian school. And so you cannot advocate for Christianity as an employee of the state, and in particular of this school. Right. And I get that argument.
Okay, well, so putting into perspective, when we've talked about this, I have a very, very close family member who is a government employee, not working in education, but, is working within the government breakdown. And it's one of those moments where this individual is not allowed to have any type of crosses within the office or to publicly pray, but different other forms of acceptance over prayer, let's say specifically, and they've given me multiple examples for Islam, has been allowed. And so it's interesting, because the idea is we want everyone to feel welcome. But instead of making everyone feel welcome, it's blatantly pushing out any form of Christianity.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, that's the problem, right? You can't then back up and say, oh, we want everybody to be welcoming and accepted, because that's not how it works, especially in a school. Now, for other realms, frankly, I think that it's nonsensical to have these sort of rules in non-educational areas. So, say you're working for whatever it might be for the government, and in your office, you can't have a cross. I mean, that's stupid. I don't, that's not, this is right. Dumb. As an educational system, though, it's more understandable. And here's, I got to back my comments up here with a little understanding of education.
You've got to tell me how, Don, because I disagree.
Well, no, here's what it is. And actually, let me set it up by giving you another quick story. So a Catholic school, in fact, the oldest Catholic school in California, they recently removed all of their statues, their religious statues, out of their school. So they took Jesus out. They took Mary out. They took them all out.
The central part of their campus, Don, Jesus and Mary, they've taken like something like almost 200 statues out, except for maybe about 15 or so on their campus.
Yeah.
In more discreet areas.
San Domenico, 167-year-old tradition as a Dominican school. And the argument was, well, we're not actually a Catholic school anymore. And I actually agree with this. They certainly are not a Catholic school anymore. And I don't think they're actually even run by the Dominicans. They're basically just a secular school now. And so they said, well, we want to take out the religious statues for exactly the same reason that we were just saying about the guy who couldn't pray. After doing some research in the community, we wanted to be more open and welcoming. That was their exact reason for doing this. Now, here's the thing, and I actually, again, in one sense, you're going to have to stick with me, but I understand it. When you're educating, when you're running a school, what you are doing is indoctrinating children to believe particular things about reality, to like particular things about reality, to think particular things are good, and to think other things are bad. So you're telling them, this is what the universe is like, this is what reality is like, and as such, you should like and not like certain things. That's what education does. That's what it is. It can't be anything else.
But hold on there. I'm going to push back at you, and this is, you know, just a word. You said it. Education pushes to indoctrinate. Indoctrination is getting people to agree to a set of beliefs without critically thinking.
Well, not necessarily. Then you need to just change the terms. But all I'm saying is, I want you to believe doctrines that I believe. Like, that's what educating is. I may have reasons or I may not. I may have good reasons or not good reasons, but ultimately there are certain doctrines that I believe that I want you to believe.
But with logic,
sure.
Argument.
You can. That's what I'm saying. You can have reasons, but the motive
that's
is still
not indoctrination. Then though.
The motive. Well, what would it be then? What would education be if not indoctrination?
It's teaching. Education isn't indoctrination, though. Education is teaching. It's an indoctrination.
Teaching
when you
what?
Just accept this.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. Like,
or use the argument.
Okay, teaching you why you should believe certain things about reality. That's what I want to do as an educator, right?
Yes, but them truth, not what I want you to believe, but you should be working toward teaching.
Well,
them
but whose truth, right? But my truth. When you say truth, it's the truth that I believe.
But are you saying Catholic schools are just teaching?
No, no. I'm just saying, like, any school. If you have a school, this is what you're doing. Okay. So all of this nonsense. I'm just setting that up. All of this nonsense about we want to be inclusive and welcoming, and we don't have strict teachings here, which is what they say. That's all nonsense. That's all garbage. Every school has a list of beliefs, whether they're articulated or not. They have a list of beliefs that they're trying to get the kids to believe. And so when you have Planned Parenthood, for instance, come in, Planned Parenthood has some doctrines that they believe about the nature of the world, such as you should have a lot of sex. And they're going to teach your kids that. Okay, so whether you want to call that indoctrinating or not, and whether they've got reasons or not, I'm just saying that's what education is. That's what all schools do. That's what, frankly, most of talk radio is. Like, when I get here on the radio, I have a list of beliefs, and I'm trying to convince you that those are correct, right? That I believe what I believe is true. And that if you believe different than me, that you're believing incorrectly. That's just how it works, right? If you're educating at all. So as a Pilates instructor, you have certain beliefs about the way the body works and the way you can be healthier. They may be true or they may not. I suspect most of your beliefs, if not all of them, Timmy, are correct, right? Like, they're true. And if somebody disagrees with you, you try to convince them that you are correct and they are mistaken. So I would say that you're indoctrinating, but again, you can give away the word if you want, but as a Pilates instructor, you're indoctrinating in the correct way to make your body healthier.
I'm still going to disagree.
Okay,
you're
fair
teaching,
enough.
And you know, you're not trying to force them to believe.
Well,
indoctrination is saying, here, just believe this, don't believe anything else. I'm willing, if you... For example, I don't think we're indoctrinating on the radio show. We're saying, here, this is what we're teaching. We hope that you critically think about it and reason through this as well.
And then agree with us.
Is forcefully going, this is what you think.
Okay, then. If you're forcing somebody, you can't really actually force anybody to believe. You can force them to say they agree with you, but there is no such thing as like actually forcefully changing somebody's mind, right? Again, indoctrination, it's a word that's got bad connotations, but actually, you know, you're just holding certain doctrines. The Catechism of the Catholic Church, its goal is to indoctrinate people in the Catholic faith. Right. It's not necessarily a bad thing. Everybody does it. All I'm saying about these Catholic schools is you're right when you say you're not Catholic. And what I would do, just to jump to the end of this conversation, because I think I'm confusing you, Timmery, what I would like to do is have every school just be very clear about what worldview we want to indoctrinate your kids in. So if we are a secular, atheistic, materialistic, promiscuous sex-loving school, we're just going to put that on our pamphlets. And if you send your kids here, know that that's what they're going to be taught. If you're a Catholic school that believes that the church is the fullness of faith and you send your kids here, know that that's what they're going to be taught. If you are a Methodist school.
Yeah,
if you're a Methodist school, know that you're going to get Methodist teaching. If you're a Muslim school, know you're going to get Muslim teaching. That's fine with me because that's what education is anyway. What is irritating to me is having these so-called Catholic schools or so-called, you know, neutral schools. There is no such thing as a neutral school. All of these government schools are essentially that atheistic, humanistic, promiscuous, sex-loving school that I just talked about. That's what most schools actually are. And so when you send your kids there, they are getting indoctrinated in those things, whether the school says that or not. So when the Catholic school tears down all their statues or when the government tells that guy, you can't pray, I say, you know what? At least the truth is out in the open. That's actually what's happening here. You're running a government school. You're running a non-Catholic school. And if you don't want your employees to pray or have statues, fair enough, but let's just be open about it and don't give me all of this nonsense about, oh, well, we just want everybody to be included. No, you don't. You don't want Catholics to be included. You don't want evangelicals like this coach to be included because he's going to pray. And so just keep those people out. And I just think we need to be clearer about the worldview that these educational systems are using, and we'd be a lot better off in trying to discuss some of these issues.
I definitely hear what you're saying with that. I think that we have to recognize the two points, and one that we can't lose our Catholic identity in trying to make people feel included. Catholic schools in California are a wreck right now. They are not living up to what the church teaches, and it's atrocious. But schools such as public schools or public employees should be allowed to bow their heads in prayer without being criticized or prevented. It's one thing if maybe they're trying to force prayer on someone. It's another thing to be able to privately bow your head in prayer. And I think that when we come to a point where our government is rejecting our ability to bow our head over a meal or bow our head in Thanksgiving, there's something wrong with that.
This has been Trending with Dawn and Timmery on Immaculate Heart Radio.
Trending.
To learn more about Dawn Johnson or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit DawnJohnsonMinistries.org or Timmery.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.